Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Cold Hard Truth Podcast. I'm Jack Smith.
And I'm Anish Gupta.
And we have a wild week 18 to review. Let's waste no time getting into it. Let's start with Colts and Jaguars. Do you want me to take a victory lap? Like, or do you want to, you know, fess up, confess to your misses on Carson Wentz early?
I'll start, I guess, because I want to kind of get it over with. Because, you know, it's going to take a little bit of time for me to heal from that one. Because the Colts, I believe, had a 78% chance to make the playoffs after their win versus New England, which
what
was
I had seen, the thing I had seen is coming into the weekend, it was 88%.
Yeah, 80, no, I'm saying 88 or 82. 2 weeks before the Raiders lost when they beat, I think, Arizona. Yeah, yep. Arizona on Christmas Day. So Christmas Day, they had a 78% chance. And then obviously, as Jack mentioned, they had an 88% chance. Because all you had to do was go on the road and beat the Jaguars that really, you know, had no business winning that game. But I, you know, watching that game, it was really sad. I'm gonna save the Wentz stuff for last. I will talk about how they got outplayed on both sides of the line of scrimmage. The defense could not get stops on third down when they needed to, and they simply let Trevor Lawrence honestly go down the field at will at times. And you know, when they needed stops, they couldn't really get it. And I was disappointed in a defense that had really stepped up against teams like Buffalo, you know, early in the game, you know, on the road, New England, Arizona, when they needed to. And for, you know, for the Colts to kind of collapse like that, that's just not something I've seen, you know, from a Frank Reich-led team. So, you know, that really, really sucks to see. Also, you know, on the offensive side of the ball, the offensive line was, you know, was getting pushed back play after play. And Jonathan Taylor, as good as he is, and he had a couple runs where you didn't, you know, you just say, hey, that's Jonathan Taylor. I was a little bit disappointed. Final game of the season, it's where, you know, like last year against the Texans to clinch a wild card spot, this man ran nuclear, like 253 yards, or not the Texans, sorry. I think it was the Jaguars. So he ran nuclear for 253. And then in this game, you know, came up short. And now I'll get to Wentz. You know, for the season that he had coming into that game, it was a perfect storybook type of season for him to finally play in a playoff game, for him to finally play more than four snaps in one. I was so excited to see that. And, you know, he let me down, and he let a lot of Colts fans down, especially on some throws that just, you know, shouldn't have been thrown, especially the pick on the left sideline. I don't know who picked it off. I think it was number 54, but it was to Mo Alie-Cox on the sideline. That was a bad read. That was simply a bad read, and you will get that with him. And also the shovel pass, I've said it time and time again. Why the hell are you doing it? That has been responsible for four out of his seven picks this year. But, you know, I'll save that, and I'll let Jack get to the recap. And I guess maybe we can retouch on, you know, what it means, further implications.
Yeah, coming into the game, I was expecting it was either going to be Wentz had to show out and he had to really improve, put the team on his back and get him to the playoffs, or it was going to have to be one of those days where Taylor, like you said, went nuclear. Neither of those happened, and now we sit here and the Colts have missed the playoffs after having an 88% chance. And it's in probably the worst way possible for them too, because a couple of weeks ago, Carson Wentz played enough snaps. They lost their first round pick. So they gave up their first round pick for a guy who was, I would argue, mostly responsible for them missing the playoffs in the last week of the season. And the team they traded their first round pick to is now in the playoffs after moving on from Carson Wentz. So pretty much just a bottom of the barrel, worst case scenario for the Colts, for Colts fans. I mean, moved into USC, been meeting a lot of people, met a guy named Kushel, who's a Colts fan. He was just not having it. Obviously a fun day for Colts fans, but like, can you defend Carson Wentz at all after that game? Like, I'm actually curious. Like, are you off the off the Carson Wentz train after that game? Like,
people asked me, how the hell can you defend him after that game? Look, I'll say this. First of all, it hurt because I was a Colts fan that day, and you know the Goop curse. So I'm sorry, Colts fans. I immediately sent out a message to a bunch of my friends. I was like, I humbly apologize for cursing this team. But yes, I will defend him a little bit. I agree with you. You know, it's hard to, you know, try and sit up here and say that, you know, walk it to him can still be the walk it to him Wentz that I so desperately desire after 2 years of just looking really bad since that MVP take. But I will say this. I think, you know, you still have a core, right, that is pretty well intact going into next year. And I think Frank Reich is still a top 10 coach in this league. He's one of my favorite coaches that I've you know, watched and covered. And I think, you know, this core is still really good, and Carson Wentz has had his moments. Yes, he's had his downs. I cannot refute that. He's probably had more downs that were significant than goods that were significant. But I cannot deny, you know, how good he's played throughout the year. He really limited the turnovers. That was the big thing with him in most of the moments throughout the year. And then obviously, you know, but the biggest moment, he could not.
I would argue the two biggest moments of their season, that like this last game and that game against the Titans.
I agree. Yeah, because that would have kept him in it. But I can't deny also the games that he's played, you know, what, like, because he had some really good wins, and I think he outplayed every QB in the wins that he had. You know, SF, New England, Buffalo, and Arizona. I would argue he outplayed all four. But
in Buffalo, he handed the ball off for four touchdowns to Jonathan Taylor.
Josh was not good that game. I think Josh.
Okay, so then Josh underplayed.
Yeah, I guess you could say Josh underplayed. But look, I think Wentz should still be the starter next year. I think, again, you know, he'll be knocking on wood for him. I don't think the knocking on wood has done me justice these past few weeks, but I'm really hoping he comes into next year healthy. I think everyone wants to see that. At least no one wishes on an injury, because he did have to come in, you know, it was a pretty, how do I say this, dysfunctional start to the year with the foot surgery. Quentin Nelson was also out. Offensive line had, I think Eric Fisher also was still recovering from an Achilles. COVID ravaged his team a little bit also. So I'm just really hoping for a healthy start to the year. And again, more stability with the system. That's probably what I'll say for the Colts. And as for Wentz, again, I cannot put him in. I think he vaulted out of the top 15 after this loss. I cannot say he's above average, you know, heading into next year. Because I can't just say, you know, look at 2017 or look at 2019 or look at, you know, week 8 against the Ravens. I can't do that. You know, as much as I love him, I am objective, and I was disappointed. I was. So I'll leave.
Yeah, I was texting with Streetcar about it yesterday, and it's funny you mentioned the above average thing. I think we both kind of agreed he is completely average. He is an average NFL quarterback. But my thing is the way he gets to average. You know, there are guys like, I don't know, who else would you describe as an average quarterback?
I mean, it's tough to say, right? Because I think the definition of average is you'll have your moments where you're here and you'll have your moments when you're here, and you just got to put them in the middle, right? Like, I mean, I get, it's tough to say, but maybe Jameis. I feel like Jameis is like an
average. I feel like Jameis would fit in this wins category, but I'm thinking like a guy who's just kind of rock solid. You're getting the same exact thing from him every day. It's nothing special, but it's
average. I'm going to say Teddy B, I guess.
You could say Teddy B. You could say, yeah, Mac Jones. Like, you could say those are average quarterbacks that stay right in the middle. Carson Wentz is the extreme of the extreme in both ways. He'll look like an MVP, and he's going to win you, you know, have those games where you're like, this guy could legitimately win us the Super Bowl. And then you'll have these games where he's legitimately the worst quarterback in the NFL. And it evens out to being average.
Yep.
But it gets there.
15 to 20. I think the 15 to 20 range of QBs is actually the ones I love talking about the most, because like you said, we can have those moments where I can say, hey, maybe he's going up, moving up the ranks. And then you have those moments where you're like, ah, crap, you know.
But the way he does it, it seems a little bit more detrimental to the team, in my opinion, just because of how extreme it is. Like, the extreme wins, they're going to get you some wins, but like, these extreme lows are legitimately going to lose you this season and make you miss out on the playoffs. Like,
I think, you know, here's what I'll say. And you did ask me, are you officially off on Wentz? I'm off on him in this way. I just don't think, I think his 2017 self is gone.
It's been gone.
I don't think he'll ever get there. I was still hopeful. I was still hopeful, but I don't think he'll ever get there. I will say this too. I just want Reich to still have confidence in him. That's all I want. No one, even throughout the season, no one really had, you know, trust in him. Even Colts fans were saying, this is the one guy, if we just had a QB. I mean, and they seem to ignore, you know, all the times that he looked good for them. And yes, I get it. He looked bad at times, but, you know, to go on the road against SF off a bye and win in primetime, I thought I was impressed. I mean, you know, as I may seem biased, but I'm also saying, you know, I'm still hopeful. I just want to see him in the playoffs. I think, because you never know, QBs have elevated, and for a guy who has shown it in the regular season, ups and downs, I just want to see him in the playoffs. I think that's where I will, if he sells in a playoff game, I'm officially out on him being ever a franchise guy again. I think that's the problem, because this was my year to truly see that. Mm-hmm. and we really didn't get it. And I'll end it on this, and maybe we can move on after that. The Colts were one of the teams that nobody wanted to see in the playoffs, and now they're the team that's out of the playoffs.
Yeah, I was going to say, they had that moniker like the whole last couple weeks of the season, like, you don't want to match up with the Colts. They'll pound it down your throat in January and February, and it's just not going to happen. And I mean, Reich kind of has to have confidence in Wentz because they really don't have an option to move on from him. Like, the reason that it was hard to get people to bite this offseason was that massive price tag, and it's still there. So it's going to be hard for the Colts to move on. Before we move on to Raiders and Chargers, which I can't wait for, I want to hear your thoughts on Trevor Lawrence, because this was, I would argue, like, one of the only games he's looked good this year, but he looked great. Like, he looked damn good.
Well, remember I think this was my worst take of the season. It was that Trevor Lawrence and the Jags would win seven games.
I thought it was six. Seven's even worse.
I think it was seven. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I think it was seven. And I'll own up to it. I was wrong, but it was me having confidence in Trevor just because of what I saw in college. You know, I watched him up close, especially in the biggest games, and he always impressed me. But, you know, I think they were riddled by the Urban Meyer thing. I think they were, again, you know, injuries, not really. Like, see, I think it was just bad, you know, vibes from Urban and the whole narratives around him. Now he's finally got, you know, something to look forward to coming into next year, right? And this is such a good way to end it. This is such a good way to end it because, you know, the NFL, we always talk about worst to first. And I did put out that in one of that post I recently put out for Random Takes. I still think the Ravens are the only shot right now. But like, for the Jags and the Jets, you've got two quarterbacks who have finally shown you something, right? That's all you wanted this year. And I think both guys are showing you, hey, we're talented, and just give us another offseason and, you know, learning kind of the system or just being in a pro-ready offense. And I think for Trevor Lawrence, the talent is there, no doubt. And he has all the tools to make a franchise quarterback. And yesterday, Sunday, was a true testament to what he can be. Crucial third downs, needing a play. The rollout to Marvin Jones, that was spectacular.
One of the best plays I've seen this year from a quarterback. Yeah,
that was amazing to watch. If you can just surround him with a little bit of more talent, right? Accumulate more capital, or just get some guys in free agency. You know, Jacksonville has a lot of cap space.
Yeah, they have the most cap space in the league.
Yeah, I think it's 60, up north of 60 maybe.
I think so.
And that's not even including the guys that they'll let go. So I think Trevor Lawrence, the future is bright. I'm really hoping that they can take more strides forward, because this Jacksonville team has just been, you know, down in the dumps. And I think if anyone can take them out of that, it's him.
I mean, obviously the most important thing for Jacksonville this offseason is the coaching search. And I feel like this one game from Trevor will really help a lot in that, because obviously, you know, you like to say that the coach is going to really want to go to Jacksonville because of Trevor Lawrence. But from what we've seen this year, like, Trevor Lawrence did not look like that generational prospect that we thought he was coming out of college. But this game, I mean, this was proof of what he can do if everything goes right around him. So I think this will be a big draw to coaches. I'm still not sure if they're going to get one of those big name guys just because of, you know, it's Jacksonville, the track record there. I would be scared if I were a coach to go to Jacksonville, but this game, the fact that you have the most salary cap in the league, having the number one overall pick, even though you won in week 18, which was one of the crazier things that I thought, you know, think could have happened in week 18. I think starting to turn the tides a little bit to who I think might go to Jacksonville, but it's all about getting that right coach. And I think that's kind of where you got to start.
Who do you think they keep at number one, or do you think they move out and take capital? Because I wouldn't be mad at it. Like, okay, Hutchinson and Thibodeau, right? Like, you already have Josh Allen. I think the defensive line is already good as it is.
I think
probably more places you can.
It might trend to being an offensive lineman at that spot, and I wouldn't be surprised at that. Now, whether they can move down to somewhere, but like, how far are you going to move down? Because it's the number one overall pick, and like, is there someone
down,
out?
I feel like you can move down to six, or, you know, and accumulate maybe a second.
But at that point, is someone going to trade up to one to have the pick? It's not as easy as trading. This is a bad draft.
Like, if this was like 2021, if this was like a 2021 type of class with quarterbacks, oh my God.
I feel like it's a really balanced class. It's not, you know, as top heavy. I've been getting into scouting, done with Hutchinson, mostly done with Thibodeau. They're both good. I think they each are lacking that like one piece to their game that's holding them back from being like the Myles Garrett, the Jadeveon Clowney level prospects. And so it's an interesting idea to think, oh, you know, maybe Jacksonville trade down, but for that to happen, someone has to trade up. And it's like, yeah, and who's going to leapfrog Detroit because they really, really want one of Hutchinson or yeah, Thibodeau. And at that point, you're giving up – it's the number one overall pick. You're giving up first rounders. You're giving up probably more than that. So I don't really see it happening. I think they either take Hutchinson or Thibodeau, which I think Hutchinson is probably a better fit because Thibodeau's, you know, a speed guy. They have that in Josh Allen already. Yeah. Or they take an offensive lineman, maybe Evan Neal.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I was thinking. Let's get into Raiders Chargers. I got back to watch the second half of that game. I watched the first half kind of, you know, out in the dining hall and then came back, sat down at the TV and was like laser focused on that game. It's an instant classic. I mean, that is one of the best games I think I've ever seen. A wild ending. You throw in, you know, everything that happened during the game, during the regular season between these two teams, it all coming down to one game, all the fourth downs, throw in the fact that it ended in a tie. They were both okay. Like the whole crazy storm. Talk to me about that game because, man, that was amazing.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm the narrative guy. I love narratives. That is why I love the NFL. The NFL will always be, you know, my favorite league to cover or watch. As you said, the story's leading up into the year, and I don't want to go too deep into it, but you know the Raiders, right? The 5-2 start, then the whole off the field stuff with Gruden, Henry Ruggs, and then even Damian Arnette, and now Nate Hobbs, and then, you know, 6-7 to win their final four. You know, Derek Carr won me over so much this year. I think he is the player, you know, because I always loved Joe Burrow. I mean, I've been talking a lot about Joe Burrow with these guys, but I think Derek Carr was the one that really, you know, won me over this year. So that's just a quick thing on him. And then for the Chargers, same kind of story. You know, they new coach. Is this finally the year that they can erase all the meltdowns? And it happened again.
I don't think they melted down. I think that's a little bit unfair.
I think in defense, right? So here's the thing, right? I'll maybe start off with the Brandon Staley timeout. First of all, I think the slander going towards him for that is ridiculous. And it's people calling for his job are ridiculously stupid. I'm sorry.
They weren't going to kneel. They were in the shotgun.
Yeah, that has to be one of the most recency biased takes I've ever seen. And I will literally not validate your football opinion if you stand by that. Because for what Brandon Staley has done, and yes, I know I was a huge Staley fan. I thought he was going to win Coach of the Year. I was all for him coming into the year. Look, he has an identity, and it's going on fourth down, going for it, you know, playing your cards like that. And the identity worked in some games, Philadelphia, Cleveland, right? The Raiders the first time. So the Chiefs the first time around too. So it's not like this guy only loses on fourth down, but the problem is, and I told this when they lost to Kansas City the second time, the media will remember the ones you fail. They will always remember the ones you fail. So, you know, the one against the Raiders on your own, I think it was 16 or 18 yard line.
19.
One. Okay. Yeah. Well, it was in the teens. That I won't agree with just because you have to
the math was there. I'm not like the math suggested heavily to go for in that situation.
I think even with analytics on your own side, though, you got to think about just not only that, right? But momentum, crowd noise, because Herbert was literally doing this the entire time. And even if you get it, right, because you're going to try a short yardage type of thing, you're not going to go deep. So even if you do get it, the odds still are, you know, you might get a field goal, touchdown is still going to be, you know, 70, 80 yards away. I didn't like the math there. That one but the other ones, even the 4th and 10, I was actually okay with. I was actually okay with the 4th and 10 on the final drive, which I think more people had a problem with just seeing a little bit of comments through and through. Because, you know, what if you kick and you get a stop, but they tied it, right? So no one's talking about that call because if they didn't get it, right, the Raiders had their own, game would have been over. Raiders had it at the like 13, 16 yard line, Chargers had 3 timeouts, but they would have just kicked a field goal, go up 10. No one's talking about that one, but it worked. So that's what I get mad about with these whole narrative things. And so the kneeling, they were, as you said, Jack, they were in the shotgun. And if you call a timeout, right, stop them. It was third down. Mm-hmm. Stop them. You couldn't. That's why you're third worst run D in the league. You want to take it from there, maybe?
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I'm not going to go out and slander Staley for calling the timeout because I don't – like, Derek Carr can come out and say all he wants that it changed their decision.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like that's just kind of something he said. Like, it just made them think about it a little more. You know, and stopping the clock too. It's like it gave them a chance to run the ball. The problem is if you're going to call a timeout, you can't allow a 10-yard run on 3rd and 4, like for the last defensive play of the season. That's the problem. It's their run defense is kind of what hampered them all season, hampered them in this game for sure. I want to hear, like, what are your thoughts on people's claims that he closed his shell on the last drive after they scored? He had the choice, you know, do you kick the extra point and send it to overtime, or do you go for two? And I feel like Staley's identity we've talked about all season,
right,
he would have gone for two there.
You're right.
And he didn't, with the season on the line, instead of just the game, like instead of the game against the Browns or the Chiefs, this is the entire season. This is the playoffs on the line, decides to kick the extra point. Are you with that crowd saying that he like You're shelled right, up yeah. And kind of,
I was actually thinking, so I was watching the game in the car ride with some friends, and we were thinking, okay, I actually thought to myself, because people were like, okay, the game is tied or whatever. I was actually thinking that too, because we talked about it all year. So, you know, this is for people, Chargers fans and people who really cover this team or watch football a lot like this. You were thinking in your mind too, would they have gone for it? I thought about it. And honestly, I would not have been mad if they did. And I would have that, because if you win there, if you get it on, you know, the confidence that you have going into the playoffs is insurmountable. That is just, that would have been a statement, you know, play. And Brandon Staley would have shut up everyone who questioned his fourth down decisions, everybody. You're right. I'm glad that we are talking about that, because that is a very crucial, you know, decision. I thought that would have been a spectacular, you know, way to win the game. And
it also would have been a horrendous way to lose it.
You're right. Yeah. But here's the thing. And oh my God, you know, you just brought up a whole new type of thing, because let's say they do get it and the Raiders lose it, right? The things on Justin Herbert, right? The whole narratives and, you know, the media, because honestly, we're talking about Derek Carr's first playoff, you know, start in his 8 or 9 year career. And then, you know, we're not really talking about Herbert as much as we should be. But if he wins it, you know, on a spectacular throw on the 2-point play, we're only talking about how this guy might be in your top 3 to 4. Is he better than Allen? This comeback down 15, you know, 6 for 6 on fourth down, converting 3 fourth and 10s, 3 fourth and 10s on one drive. We would have not stopped talking about it. And I would have been all for it, because here's the thing. As much as I love Joe Burrow, and I've told Jack this, I have never said he is truly better than Herbert overall. I still think it really sucks, because I wanted him in the playoffs to really decide that, because that's where it is. That's where the money matters. And we're only going to get to see one out of the two. But you're right, Jack. If they had gotten it, Herbert gets it, Carr could have been on his way out, right? You go 3 and out up, they were up 7 and you go, or because Chargers were down 22-20, you go 3 and out. People would have called for that. People would have said, you know, is he really still your guy? And what is he doing overtime? 2 field goal winning drives. So, you know, narratives would have completely switched. I'm with you on that.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard a lot of people talk about it, and I agree that I think the reason Staley didn't go for two, which I totally think it's his identity. And I think the two reasons that influenced that decision were the fact that they went on a 19 play drive. Their team was absolutely gassed.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
receivers walking. I saw that.
You can't after that drive, I don't think you can really put it on the arm of your quarterback again and risk losing the game there. And also the fact that if it ended in a tie, they still would have gone to the playoffs.
You're right.
So
yeah, you're right.
Like, it's not like if you kick it in overtime, or you kick it, you go to overtime. It's either you have to win or lose. They could have tied and they would have been perfectly fine. So I don't know what the math on that decision was. I feel like his identity, you know, tends to lean towards those go for it decisions. But in this specific case, I feel like the idea that they could tie and be perfectly fine definitely influenced that decision. I would have loved to see it. It would have been amazing football, but we got an overtime, was good as well. Man, I wish Carlson missed that kick. I wanted both of those teams in the playoffs.
We would have had to see Herbert play in the snow though against Buffalo, and we would have had to see the Raiders get demolished by the Chiefs. So
that's true. But now we have to watch the Steelers get demolished by the Chiefs. So it's like,
yeah,
it's
which, not that much which sucks. But like, you know, I mean, do you want to maybe touch on Justin Herbert really quick, because get to talk about him in January?
That decision, if they had won that game or tied it and gone to the playoffs, I feel like that one game alone should have vaulted him into that MVP conversation. Like, that is an MVP level performance. I'm not sure I've seen a more gutsy quarterback performance.
He was incredible. All year. And look, I'm getting pissed, because as much as I love Burrow, I'm getting mad at all the recency bias. I really am. I'm seeing all, you know, because I like seeing, you know, football TikToks, and I like seeing, you know, I love looking at comments on Instagram posts and stuff like that. Everybody's like, oh, Burrow could have done that. Burrow's so much better. Look what he's doing. Come on, really? I mean,
Burrow's not making that. Do you see the throw over the middle of the post where he fit it in between three defenders?
Yeah,
though. Burrow doesn't have the arm to do that.
Like, exactly. And as much as, you know, my friend kind of clowns me for liking Burrow, he's like, baby arm Burrow. I do agree. He can't make throws on the far hash. Like, he struggles with that. I agree. Herbert can. Herbert simply is more talented. And I love Joe Burrow. Don't get me wrong. But Justin Herbert, in terms of talent, this guy has the potential to be an all-time great just off that alone. And in terms of his, you know, his gutsiness, his, you know, ability to go be down 15 when the game was necessarily over, he said, nope, we're going to keep going. We're going to push through. Right. And people aren't even talking about that 2-point conversion enough, because I think they didn't make
going, that. Like the way Chris Collinsworth said it, he went five guys. He was never planning on throwing it to Austin Eckler and went all the way around his progressions to find him.
This dude is spectacular. And
even the incompletions were perfect throws. The ones to Mike Williams where
oh my God. And yes, there were good defensive plays, no doubt, but the throws were just immaculate. And I think that's probably the one thing that sucks going in is the fact that we won't get to see this man in January.
And we have to see Ben Roethlisberger when we could be seeing Justin Herbert in the playoffs.
Yeah. We'll have to, you know, man, we have to wait another year. And I don't even know if they're going to go, which sucks because the Chargers play in a loaded AFC West. Because Derek Carr is here to stay. And, you know, we didn't even talk about him enough, but I think he's had a top 7 year this year. I'll put Mahomes, Rodgers, not in that order, right? Mahomes, Rodgers, Brady, Burrow, Herbert, and Allen, for sure. The rest, I don't know. Dak is up in the air. Stafford is up in the air.
I'll give Stafford. Like, Stafford, I feel like, while he's had his, you know, down moments, he's been better than Carr this year.
I don't know. When it matters,
you know, per game basis, I know he's missed some. I think he's been better this year. I agree with that top 10. I'll agree top 10.
And here's the thing, right? I'll say this to end off my Carr thing. What made me fall in love with Wentz a lot was that 4-game stretch when they were 5-7 in 2019. And he basically had nobody because of injuries and stuff. Carr literally had the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. 4-game stretch. Receivers were kind of down, right? Besides for Hunter Renfrow. Hunter Renfrow, I absolutely love Hunter Renfrow.
Well, he did it without Hunter Renfrow in this game. That's the great thing.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is a perfect comparison. So, you know what? If Carr, you want to take over the spot for Wentz for number one.
Well, I mean, Wentz didn't have, you know, probably the number one receiver coming into the year with the DUI in the middle of the year. A fired coach from racist emails.
Exactly. And coach. Yep. See? So,
let's just say, I mean, hats off to the Raiders. We'll get to them and hopefully, you know, what I think will be a good game against the Bengals and another episode this week, which we're going to do previewing the wild card. Shrikar will be there for that one. Hats off to the Raiders and what a game. Like, that's arguably, I think, one of the best football games. No. And at least recently, like, if not.
One of the best ends to a season, I think, ever. And the Niners Seahawks game.
The worst part is, though, the NFL is going to use this to say, like, hey, look, week 18 was a good idea.
I mean, you know, it wasn't.
There were like 3 games that mattered.
Yeah, but all 3 were great. All 3.
Yeah. Well, let's get to the other one. 49ers Rams. We'll get quickly through this one. Steelers Ravens, and then touch on Black Monday a little bit with the coach firings and some non firings. 49ers Rams was like a really weird game. It seemed like it was over from the jump. Niners didn't have Trent Williams. They were getting abused by the Rams defensive line, and Rams went up early. Sean McVay rushes onto the field in the end zone to celebrate with his team. You know, and then the Niners just start to crawl back and they start to, you know, put up some points then you look up and they're winning the game. And it's back and forth in the end, Cooper Kupp with the touchdown, and then overtime, the Niners go down and win it. And now they're in the playoffs. They clinch their spot. They needed to win because the Saints won. It was a really good game. Debo Samuel played well. And so did Jimmy Garoppolo. Like, it's an interesting thing. We have Jimmy Garoppolo and Derek Carr in the playoffs, kind of similar stories. Carr's obviously better, but two guys that kind of clutched up to get their team in the playoffs.
Yeah. So I'm going to talk about three things. One, Cooper Kupp is just, I mean, this guy is incredible. Okay. I'm pretty sure he's better than Robert Woods.
I'm glad he didn't get the record because, like, it wouldn't have counted anyway. And he didn't even want it to count. Like, he said it wouldn't count.
Why are people saying, like, okay, just because he had an extra game? I get it. Fine. You know, he did. But, you know, game for game, this dude was insane. He didn't have a single bad game, single game where he was you know, his worst game was 5 catches, 64 yards against the Cardinals. That was his worst game of the year. That's unheard of. This dude is so productive. And people are saying, oh, he's a slot guy. Okay. How many slot guys or how many guys on the outside can do what he did on the touchdown catch and that deep ball where he absolutely, it was a bit underthrown and he came back for it and made it a spectacular catch. So that's what I'm going to say about Cooper Kupp. I'm so glad he's going to, you know, play in the playoffs. I think he's second best receiver heading into it. Deebo Samuel. Yeah, that's my guy. But just how valuable he is to the team. That is a true wide receiver one. That's what I said when he came out. I thought he had the potential to be a true wide receiver one.
QB one too.
Yeah, QB one, RB one. Hey, I mean, but I think for the, you know, the Niners rally behind this guy. Like he is their most valuable player on offense. Or actually, okay, no, I can't even say that because Trent and maybe Kittle, but that game he most definitely was. And to do what he can do, he's so electric on every given play. He's a given playmaker. That is what he is. And the reason why I love him so much was not even because of his play. It was because of what he used to post coming into the NFL, which I've told these guys. But yeah, hats off to him. I think he was the biggest reason why they came back. But the second biggest reason, and I wouldn't even be mad if you were first, Jimmy Garoppolo. And I want Niner fans to give me a damn apology. I want every Niner. I want Shrikar to write a paragraph apology. I want every Niner fan that I argued with throughout the entire year to apologize for me about Jimmy Garoppolo. What did I tell him? Yes, he is inconsistent. Yes, he is not that talented. But when it matters most, he always comes through for you all the time. The 2 third-and-16s in 2019, what did he do? He converted them. What did he do this game? 90 yards, down 7, okay? I mean, he made throw after throw that was needed. This guy is it. Like, I get it. He's not going to, you know, wow you or, and yes, he'll lose you a couple games. But when they've needed him to be him, he's done it. I can't refute that. That is why I will always keep him in that 12 to 15 range. I just think he's shown up when it matters. And that's what you need from a quarterback sometimes. Hats off to Jimmy G. I'm so glad that they did not put in Trey Lance after that 17-0 start because people were calling for it. I am so glad. And it's going to suck because I think they're going to move off him in 2022, but he will find a home.
Yeah, I feel like he's going to go to one of those teams like Houston. He might go to Detroit and he'll win some games. Like, of course, everyone knows kind of my opinion on Jimmy Garoppolo. He's not actually that good of a quarterback, but he's able to win those games. You know, save for the Emmanuel Sanders missed deep ball in the Super Bowl, he's pretty much clutched up in every other big moment he's been asked to as a San Francisco 49er. I think the offense is better with Trey Lance, but you're going to win that game late in the game with Jimmy G rather than Trey Lance. So hats off to Jimmy G, hats off to the Niners. They go to the playoffs. I'm really glad because I didn't think it was going to be super entertaining with the Saints in the playoffs. And now we've got a really, really interesting matchup. I'm not going to spoil my pick yet, but the Cowboys, let's just say that I don't think they're, you know, they should be a big favorite in this one.
So the line is -3 and you always get that for a home team. So They're saying it's even.
It's going to be a toss-up. Hopefully Trent Williams is back for that game and we'll get a really good NFC wild card matchup. Speaking about boring in the playoffs, like I thought the Saints would be, we have to see the Steelers in the playoffs. I mean, they were able to beat the Ravens. Unfortunately, Lamar Jackson never came back after that injury against the Browns, and the Ravens now miss the playoffs. And the Steelers sneak in just because the Colts lost, and that ruined my hot take earlier in the season that only one AFC North team would make the playoff. Man. I'm mad about that one.
I'm also mad because they should have never tied with Detroit to begin with. And if they didn't, the Colts would have gotten in off the conference tiebreakers.
Well, so the Colts should have never lost to the Jaguars.
But yeah, I know. But you know, like the Steelers, man, here's what I'll say. You know, as much as I hate them, and I really hate that we're going to see the Steelers instead of Justin Herbert, like Big Ben instead of Justin Herbert. You got to give them credit. Like they win when they need to. They always are in the thick of it. Like we've said, they're still not a losing season. And that's why I can never predict them to go. I saw everyone saying 7-10, 7-10. And everyone's like saying, okay, is this the year? I need to see it first. I can't predict it until I see it. So the Steelers will always be one of those teams that you just can't count out. When they needed it, you know, Big Ben, when they needed him to kind of make some plays on third down, especially in that field goal winning drive, he did. Deontay Johnson too, right? That 3rd-and-10 where he spun Jimmy Smith. Like, they made the plays when they needed to. I can't even hate, you know. And for the Ravens, an 8-3 start, and they were looking like one of the hottest teams in the AFC. Lose 6 straight, that really sucks. But, you know, hey, now they're fourth in the division.
It was six straight.
Yeah, it was 8-3, and then they so but guess what? They get all the last place teams, and this is easily a team that can go last to first.
Yeah.
Easy. This is without a doubt everyone's team, you know, to keep on the Raiders. So for both
and they pick higher, they pick higher in the draft too. Now I've seen mock drafts having them get N'Kobe Dean, who just absolutely demolished the playoffs. Like the Ravens are going
to
be a dangerous team next year.
I mean, we still get the 13 over. I have to look. I don't know why we get a higher pick, but we're last in, or, but we're third in stand. I don't know why that's true, but apparently we have the 13th and they have the 14th pick.
I have seen that. That is weird.
Yeah. So
do you have the same record? I can't.
Yeah, we both are 8-9, but we have the higher in the standings because we have a better division record.
I think strength of schedule is the draft tiebreaker. That's what happened last year with the Jets and the Jags.
Okay. Yeah. So I think that might be.
So that's weird. They should really use the same.
Hey, I guess
tiebreaker.
Yeah,
I know you'll.
I'll take the better pick. That's what I wanted the entire time. So I guess.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. But yeah, that's for enough for Baltimore, and then again Pittsburgh. I guess you know we're gonna have to see them in the playoffs. Whatever.
Congratulations to T.J. Watt too. Tied the sack record. Yes. He's still not my defensive player of the year. But
what? Don't tell me you still have Aaron Donald. Come on.
We'll get into this in an award post, but I'll say that Aaron Donald played the most snaps that PFF has ever charted from a defensive interior. T.J. Watt missed, 3 games?
You're right.
Aaron Donald had...
But on a per-game basis, when they were...
It's not a per-game award. It's a season award.
Fair, but when he's been...
First of all, I'll just say this. Defensive player of the year should not just be whoever had the most sacks in the league.
Oh, of course. No, but I'm not even counting... But when they've needed him to be there... He has made plays consistently for this team. Remember the Seahawks game in overtime, right? Like he has made plays to.
No, I know. Really like, trust me, he's number two. He's right up there. He's been fantastic. Probably first team All Pro.
For sure. I don't think it's without.
I want to put some respect on Max Crosby's name, considering he had like the third most pressures. Like,
are they the same position though? Because I think they.
I don't know whether they'll put him at linebacker or edge. Like, I don't know the way they do it. It'll be Miles on one side. TJ and Max, like
I really hope Max
gets those. I'll agree. Pick three of those, or two of those three, and that's your first team, and whoever's not is on the second team. But no, Aaron Donald is my defense player of the year. We'll save that for an awards post, though.
Interesting.
Okay. Black Monday, obviously the day after the NFL season ends, you get a lot of coach firings, and you get some teams deciding to stick by their coaches. The two big things for me, we saw Joe Judge staying as the coach of the New York Giants, and Brian Flores, like surprisingly fired. I woke up, saw that, and I'm enthralled because, you know, he was in the division. I think he's one of the best coaches in the NFL. Like if they were able to make the playoffs, which is winning one more game for them, I would have given him coach of the year. Like legitimately after coming back from that start, I would have given him coach of the year, and now they fire him. Your takes on those two, some other firings and firings on Black Monday. You know, what do you think?
Yeah. Ironically, remember last year I was a fan of the Joe Judge hire. I thought, you know, maybe he could change a little bit of the culture there. And he had honestly a pretty good year last year. Yes, I know it was 6-10, but the end of the season was pretty good. This year has just been horrendous. I cannot, you know, why are you playing Mike Glennon over Jake Fromm? At least see what you have. Play him more, right? Fine, you're going to lose games, but at least see if you have something there, right? Daniel Jones hasn't played, and I can't, but here's what I'll say, right? Look at the team without him. I get it. Daniel Jones has shown he's not, you know, insanely good, but this is genuinely the worst team in the NFL without him. Like, I think it's, them, then Jacksonville, then maybe Carolina. I don't know.
They weren't much better with him.
Agreed, but you can see what he's having to deal with. This is just, you need changes everywhere. Personnel, offense, defense. I mean, this team is abysmal, and I think they have one of the worst futures heading into next year, and maybe even 2023 and 2024. This team is just atrocious to watch. It's tough because the Big Blue is one of the best franchises in football, but God, I mean, Joe Judge really does not deserve to stay. I do agree with that. And then Brian Flores, honestly, I think this is better for him because I'm really hoping he goes to a team with at least a good offense and let him handle, you know, the defense and make, you know, help them kind of elevate. Because that's what he did with the Dolphins. Remember his first game, they lost 59-0 to the Ravens. I don't know if you remember that. Yeah. That was, yeah.
Because that's when we were all doubting Lamar that offseason. He comes out, him and Marquise Brown put up like 1,000 points.
Video game numbers. So, and he's come a long way since then. And I cannot, you know, tip my hat to, he was second in coach of the year voting last year. This year, as you mentioned, Jack, I would have given it too. You know, I think now Vrabel is going to win it. But I hope First of all, I saw him interview with the Bears. I really hope he doesn't go there. Sorry, Sam. I've been helping him out with the whole Bears coaching situation. I think he should wait. Wait Denver. For the playoffs to end. Let it simmer down because everyone wants him. Like, he is still the top guy. And, yeah, for the Dolphins, what are you doing? Why are you listening to Greer over Ryan Flores? Like,
I think it's just because of his relationship with Tua. Yeah. And at that point, you know, I understand it. But, like, I just think the Dolphins are in such a worse spot. First of all, you're not going to find someone better than him. I don't think there's a guy out there that you're just going to be a better hire. Because I think Flores is, like, a top 10 coach.
Yeah.
And yeah,
if you're looking at the Niners OC, come on, man. Really? Really?
I don't know. And the fact that, you know, their defensive scheme is built completely, like, their personnel too, is built completely around what Flores does. Which and is, now, like,
it's so similar to New England.
Yep.
And now, what are you going to do now? Try and do the same stuff again? Like,
I think it's a really good opportunity for Flores. You know, a couple of years ago, we thought the Dolphins had maybe the highest potential in the league. I'm not sure I see that anymore. I think with Tua under center, I don't know if that's really there. Like, their potential to be, you know, a playoff team, get the wild card game every year. But I think he can go to Denver. He can go to maybe Chicago. He can go to Minnesota, and he can build, you know, a team that can go out there and win a division.
I like the Minnesota. I'm liking that
one. I was talking about it with Streetcar too, and I guess this is a good segue into, you know, the last thing I wanted to talk about, which jobs are the most appealing. Right now, I think, you know, based on what you have currently set in place, maybe the Raiders and the Broncos, I feel like, are probably the two most appealing. I think the Broncos have a lot of talent on defense, and they're a quarterback away from having one of the best offenses in the league, in my opinion, because you're able to run the ball with Javonte. You got a pretty good set of wide receivers, a decent offensive line. You get a guy like Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, Deshaun Watson, draft a quarterback, get someone good in there. They could be a very good team. But the thing about the Vikings, and I've kind of said this with Streetcar as we've texted about it for the last couple months, the Vikings are my one team where if Aaron Rodgers leaves Green Bay, the NFC North is wide open. Like, it is going to be so easy to win that division if Aaron Rodgers is gone. I'm not a believer in Jordan Love. The Bears are still, you know, they have to rebuild too. So it's basically a scramble for, like, who can monopolize the NFC North first. So the Vikings, I think, are a very intriguing job. I think they should get talked about more. Some pieces, you know, they don't have, you know, the guys that I think some of the other teams have. But, man, if Aaron Rodgers is out, you're going to win a division. That's where you want to go.
Here are my rankings. I actually have Minnesota 1. Wow. And tied, I think maybe tied with LV. I think Rich Pasaccia actually should get it. They should stick with him. So I'm going to take LV out right now. I'm just saying the non-playoff teams. I'm actually going to put Minnesota 1 in here as well. My problem with Denver is this. Yes, you have a lot of talent on both sides of the ball, but you also have to go up against Mahomes, Herbert, and Carr twice a year. That's 6 games where it's going to be really hard to win as a, you know, kind of a first year, second year head coach. And if you aren't able to win those games in 2 years, George Patton's going to say out. So, you know, Fangio couldn't do it in 3 years. What's to say, you know, a new head coach can, because I don't think Fangio is that bad of a head coach. I think he, as a, you know, personality, I don't really like him, but as a coach, I can't deny how good he's been on the defensive side. So
yeah, I think he's also one of those guys that's just better as a coordinator.
Yeah.
And agreed. Some team is going to get a really, really good defense coordinator this year.
Agreed. Yeah. We could see a Dan Quinn type of rebound from him. But for Minnesota, the reason why I like it is because they also have playmakers on both sides of the ball, and Kirk Cousins isn't bad. Right. And I think, you know, for a coach, you can easily implement a culture change there. Right. I already talked about it with Zimmer enough. Right. The fact that they weren't hyped after, you know, Dalvin stiff armed a dude. I've never seen that before. I've never seen a team just not show any type of emotion like that. And you've got Justin Jefferson, who people are regarding as a top 3 receiver in football. And I also am with, you know, guys on that. So and on the defensive side of the ball, they have, yeah, top 2. Sorry.
Putting them 2 right now.
Oh, okay. Over cup. Okay. 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 Well, you know, we'll talk about that a little bit more. Yeah, also on defense, you've got still playmakers. And I think Danielle Hunter will come back as injury prone as he is. He's still pretty young. That's why I think Minnesota is really intriguing, just because also among the wildcard teams going into next year, I guess, Saints and the 49ers are the only ones I'm really confident on. And I think Minnesota can be better than Philly. I think Minnesota can be better than Washington. You know, all the teams that are of Atlanta, right? Like they still have a pretty good core intact. And that's why I think Minnesota would be really good hire to, cause you already have playmakers in place and you can really handle your one side. And that's my take on Minnesota. And you already mentioned if Aaron Rodgers leaves, Minnesota could dominate that division
and he'll be gone in at least, you know, 3 to 4 years. I think if he doesn't leave this year, like, I don't, he definitely won't make it past free agency. Like, he's not going to re-sign with the Packers. And so it's, you know, you've got maybe 1 to 2 years, you build the culture, and then you're going to take over the NFC North. And obviously the NFC, I think we've agreed all year, while it's top heavy, it's way easier to make the playoffs in the NFC. So yeah, if I'm a coach, I'm trying to head to the NFC.
100%. Because all the young guys, all the young QBs are on the AFC. So
yeah, I don't love the Bears' job, Jaguars' job. I have some questions about, but those, I think those three, the Raiders, the Broncos, and the Vikings are the three really intriguing ones.
I will put
the
Jags over the Bears, though. I will put the Jags.
Yeah, I will too. Are those the only five open? I think so.
Yes.
And well, we'll see if other ones come open.
I want the Bears to look at Dable, Ryan Dable. I want an offense.
I believe they have. They have.
He's my number one for them. Yeah. I said that in the post too. Look for offensive minded guys. The reason why they're not available is because they succeed. Like, that's the reason why you can't find them. That's why defensive coaches are always the ones kind of shuffling throughout. That's, you always see that. Offensive minded head coaches are the ones that succeed. Look at the tape, look at the history, and look at right now who are in the playoffs. Simple as that.
Okay. Last thought to end it off. Jim Harbaugh, the NFL.
I'm 50-50 on it. I think the only place he should go is LV. And if LV locks up Passaccia, you should stay in Michigan.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. Like, I don't understand why he'd really want to leave Michigan. Like, now is your time to build something at Michigan. You build off the fact that you just made the playoffs.
Yeah, that's going to help you so much for recruiting, because Ohio State always knocks him out in that. And I feel like they'll be better at recruiting this year too. But, like, you can build on it. If you can build on it again next year, if you're looking at Ohio State, Michigan, right? Right? Now it's a little bit more up and down versus, you know, back then it's like, oh, for sure, I'm going to the team where I'll play in meaningful games and build my brand. But
I mean, yeah, and you coming to USC and focusing on recruiting a lot, it's like you have that allure. Michigan and SC, two of the schools, like, you have the allure. You're Michigan. You haven't been really able to back it up with your play in the past. Now you've made the playoffs, so you can say, we're Michigan, and we're good right now. Yep. So I think I agree with you. Take the Vegas job or stay in Michigan. That's all we're going to have for you guys in this episode. We'll be back later this week on Thursday. Shriek, I'll be back. We're going to preview and pick all of the wild card weekends. It's going to be an absolutely great weekend. Saturday, Sunday, Monday, 3 days of games. It's going to be great. So we'll be back on probably Thursday or Friday with an episode previewing those games. So keep an eye out for that one. If you're on YouTube, please consider hitting the like button, subscribe button, leaving a comment, all that stuff. And if you're on Apple or Spotify, please consider liking the show. So leaving a 5-star review if you enjoyed. And, you know, any last thoughts before we sign off?
Kudos to Nick Sirianni. I'm going to make a little takeaway on him. I want to talk about him on the preview. We'll talk about him. But, yeah. Eagles fans, you owe me an apology for Sirianni. That's all I'm going
to
say.
Yeah, so we'll see you to talk about the Big Ben retirement party, you know, this Thursday. But that's all we have for you guys in this episode. We've been the Full Truth Podcast, and we will see you next time.